There's not a lot of us here. Figure it out.
That's a good, nice and easy.
That's what I'm thinking.
There was no accident.
He had to have directed it, right? The client, yeah, I'm thinking the client. Exactly. You have to tell us.
Let's go ahead, Zach. I'll do roll tomorrow.
We're ready. We're almost ready.
Are you good to call and roll?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to call this meeting of the Carson City Historic Resources Commission for Monday, September 25th, 2017 at 5:38 to order. We have a roll call.
Chairperson Drews.
Here.
Vice Chair Daugherty. Commissioner Block.
Here.
Commissioner Hayes.
Here.
Commissioner Schmitter.
Here.
Commissioner Smith. Commissioner Spolda.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Tamara. Next item B, public comments. Members of the public who wish to address the commission may approach the podium at this time to speak on matters relevant to or within the authority of the Historic Resources Commission, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this public comment portion of the agenda. We have a public comment.
Could you, do.
Introduce your, or give us your name.
My name is Hallie Murphy, and I am here from St. Peter's Episcopal Church with two colleagues, Gail and Allison. I would like to start by thanking you all for serving on this very important commission. We at St. Peter's recognize that the historic district is a jewel in this town, and we recognize that we've got a little tiny patch of that jewel under our care, and we've got some things that we would like to do on the property. You may recall, Chairman Drews, a decade ago or so, we came before the commission with big plans for this big grand columbarium. We could have put 300 dead people there. Yeah, well, that plan went away with the crash of the markets in 2008. And we have revisited our plans to do something like a columbarium on the property. But it's not a columbarium. We've thrown all those plans out. What I'm here to ask for tonight is we would like to invite interested commissioners to come and spend an hour with us on the property, walking around and talking about some of the concepts that we have. None of them are hard structures necessarily at this point, but I think it's a good time for us to revisit what is historically relevant and what might not be historically relevant, maybe some of the values that we need to attend to on the property. And so we would just like to invite just a casual, this is a casual invitation, to come and chat with us on the property about being in the historic district and help us, help guide us with your wisdom to maybe we'll come up with a plan that we have to bring to you and ask for your approval. But we're just in concept. We're bouncing ideas around right now, and we're looking for that. So we're thinking either sometime on a Friday or sometime on a Saturday. The property is pretty quiet on those days. Are any commissioners interested in taking us up on our invitation?
Mr. Chair, Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager, I'm happy to coordinate with Ms. Murphy and identify less than a quorum to potentially visit the site and review historically or contributing features of the site and non-contributing.
Okay.
We can't have a quorum or it would be an illegal meeting.
Right on. I gotcha.
And we really can't act on it since it's not agendized, but that's exactly what I was going to suggest.
Okay.
If you could coordinate that, Hope, and get us out an email, we'd certainly be happy to help.
We look forward to rekindling our relationship with you and having this dialogue and moving forward with our property.
Thank you very much, Haley.
All right, thank you. Oh, and Jed?
It's going to be a long walk.
Yeah, it's going to be a long walk. Rory Hogan wants your phone number. Okay, thank you.
Is there any other public comment? Item C, for possible action, we have approval of the minutes from the June 8th, 2017 meeting.
So I move for approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Item carries unanimously. Next item, D, modification of the agenda. Agenda management notice: items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Lee, is there any need for modifications?
No, sir.
Commission members? Hearing none, we'll move to E, disclosures. Any members of the commission, member of the commission that may explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission. Do we have any disclosures? Hearing none, we'll move to F, public hearing matters. F1, presentation. A presentation on the Historic District Blue Line by Joel Dunn, Executive Director of the Carson City Cultural and Tourism Authority, and his associate, Kyle Horvath, Marketing Manager. What'd you do with Kyle?
Bowling night. Oh, thank you. For the record, Joel Dunn, the Executive Director of the Carson City Culture and Tourism Authority. And yes, although Kyle would love to have been here, he did put together a list of some of the accomplishments and things we've been doing with the Blue Line over the course of the last 4 years. But he's in the third week of bowling, and apparently establishing your handicap for your bowling league's pretty important. So, it's amazing that I took over the Bureau 2013, and I've had an opportunity to be in front of most commissions, public meetings, volunteer groups, and this is the first opportunity that I've had to be in front of you, although I think some of you have been had an opportunity to let you know what we're doing in other forums, but not this forum. So thank you for this opportunity tonight. So kind of going back to the start of my tenure now with the Bureau, going on 5 years, one of the first things we were doing with the Bureau was going through some pretty serious rebranding, some restructuring of the Bureau. And with that, I think that there was unfortunately a little bit of a rumor mill that we were foregoing our historical significance in Carson City for the benefit of rebranding and the dollars that were coming with that rebranding. And I can tell you nothing further from the truth. I'm born and raised in Carson City, and there's three generations of Duns that certainly wouldn't let that happen with me as the executive director. So looking at how visitors were getting their information 4 years ago, we were a little bit behind the times. We had a non-responsive website, no social media presence, and certainly weren't developing anything by way of an app. And an app was, at that time, one of the most beneficial ways to get information in front of potential visitors, coming to Carson City. So one of the first things we did was put in for a grant through Nevada Commission on Tourism, now named Travel Nevada. And they partnered with us to put together an app that's basically a real-time visitor's guide. And one of the first things that that app was used for was creating a guided tour of the Blue Line through an app process. So I'll kind of go through some of the bullet points my staff has put together and highlight any time you have a question of anything that we've done over the last couple of years. So with that app, it gave us the opportunity to go from what was currently in printed piece with a little over 20 homes jumping up to 43 different stops in the app, because it gave the opportunity for the visitor to really transition through their experience on the Blue Line a little quicker with the app. In addition to that, we wanted to create an audio component. So with the 43 stops currently on the Blue Line, there's also an audio component that'll give you a lot more historical significance of each one of the homes and certainly a better visitor experience. We also had to redesign the map with the corresponding 12 of those additional homes. We certainly have worked with members of the commission, with the museum, members of the community, in making sure that we are doing our fact-checking and adding the additional homes and also putting together the audio tour. So that app, currently the app has averaged over the first 4 years after launch a little over 46,000 sessions a year. So it certainly has become a very used tool for visitors. I can tell you, I don't push the download of the app really that much outside of the community now. Where it's used is when we get visitors coming into the visitor center, the first thing they're asked to do is download our app, and it becomes their visitor's guide while they're here in town. Now, as most visitors' apps, once they load it and they visit our community, they typically take it off of their phone. We don't really want to overload our smartphones with a lot of apps anymore, but the fact that we're averaging over 46,000 sessions a year certainly surpasses the expectations that I had and also what Travel Nevada's grant. With that, we had to take new images of each one of the locations and create that video component. We did that with a lot of different community partners, and I think the 43 stops, we ended up with a little over 200 additional photos, making sure that it would format into the app. Hopefully you've all downloaded that app. It's certainly a useful tool, not only for visitors, but also for residents. Has calendar of events, every restaurant, lodging properties, everything you could possibly want to do in Carson City and our surrounding areas. So moving forward over the last year, we've made quite a bit of progress once again with the Blue Line, making sure that we're adapting to what visitors are wanting and typically expect when they come into a community. And that's with the redesign of, once again, that map. We're working with a local artist, Deborah Ottinger. She was also awarded one of the artistic bike racks that we'll be launching here downtown in the next couple of months, so I'm excited about that. It'll end up being 30 custom art pieces that can also function as a bike rack. We're currently working with the docents at the museum, and they're offering guided tours for us. And anytime that we've got fam tours, writers, bloggers coming into the community, we reach out to them to make sure that they create a memorable experience that is worthy of writing about. Working also with Mary Bennett with the Ghost Walk, integrating with, once again, another grant that we applied for and were successful with Travel Nevada, to have the stories of the paranormal throughout that ghost walk. And if any of you have had the opportunity to go on one of Mary's ghost walks, they're certainly not about the ghosts. They're about the historical significance tied into a little bit of a paranormal experience throughout the west side. We also had a 30-minute special on Mountain Resort TV that showcased the Blue Line Tour. That's been shown 7 times, reaching each time a little over 280,000 households throughout Northern California. I think it was one of their most successful episodes over the course of the last year. We also shot an episode of Wild Nevada, once again showcasing the Blue Line Tour. Had a group walking through, and I think they had 2 or 3 dogs with them, and that'll air a couple of times in their season coming up. We've started to expand now with the experience that we're having and the amount of exposure we're getting on the Blue Line through our app. We've once again updated a lot of the audio component over the course of the last couple of months, and also starting to update some of the photos for the Blue Line. Most importantly, we're looking at the future. The city's put together a work group with community members to include the Visitors Bureau to look at what we can do in the future with the Blue Line to enhance a better experience. We've spent a lot of time and resources on painting the Blue Line over the course of the life of the Blue Line, and I think that work group is looking at alternatives, and that may be, you know, some inlaid, medallions, the big M word, the inlaid medallions. And once again, we'll go through that process through grants. It'll be funded primarily through the Visitors Bureau. We've had an amazing 4 years. It's given us a lot of opportunities to invest back into the infrastructure within our own community and not just marketing outside of our community. Moving on, what we're going to be integrating through some of these grants and also hopefully through a grant that we've applied with SHPO is the beacon technology. This is kind of the next step in not only apps but also web-based. What it'll provide a guest that comes into our community, if they approach one of the houses on the Blue Line tour within a defined geolocation, it's going to work through their phone and it'll launch that video. It'll launch the video that we're creating of the ghost walk. So once again, just a new technology incorporating it. I don't believe anyone's in the United States so far has incorporated the beacon technology into an app primarily for historical tour also. So I'm really looking forward to the future of the Blue Line. It's certainly one of the biggest assets we have. Everyone that comes into the Visitors Bureau, and we're averaging a little over 60,000 visitors a year since we've moved from the Railroad Museum, every one of them is asked to download the app. And if they don't have a smartphone, we have some printed collateral. You have some in front of you, a simple rack card that we have in all of the lodging properties, also some primary spots throughout the community. The rack cards also get distributed throughout the Truckee and Tahoe and Reno area. We showcase the new Blue Line and the center spread of our visitor's guide, a little bit of history on each one of the stops. I'd like to suggest that you read the visitor's guide. It's a different approach. It's not a visitor's guide giving you just a listing of properties and a listing of restaurants. You get an opportunity to meet the faces of Carson City, those people that are making a difference. So that up, I won't take your entire night. Just want to leave it open to any questions.
Thanks, Joel.
You bet.
Any commission member questions?
Great, and the new properties. A great addition.
Great. One of the things Joel failed to mention is that the working group is also looking at adding additional properties within the district, too, that we can either feature as a Blue Line or another type of tour through the district and in Carson, and even considering the east side at some point. So it's a dynamic process, and I hope we can get the beacon technology going.
I think
a good start.
The inclusion of the beacon technology really opens up a lot of opportunities. Once again, right now you want to try to limit that experience to just a couple of hours when visitors have a chance to walk around the west side. This will open up so many different opportunities. That technology can also be used to geofence the entire downtown. It gives me opportunities on the back end to really track our visitors and see the experience that they're having, where they're going, where they're spending their time, and it gives us just so many different opportunities. So, yeah, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Joel.
Yep.
Any public comment? Hearing with none, we'll move to F2, possible action, HRC-17-120, to consider a request from the Allison McKenzie Limited owner, Telegraph Associates, LLC, for the installation of replacement windows and the installation of an exterior door and patio area on property zoned residential office, RO, located at 402 North Division Street, APN 003-238-05. Lee.
I'd just like to interject my piece in here. I want to recuse myself since by way of marriage I'm tied into the ownership group that's is Telegraph Associates, LLC, so I'll go sit in the audience for this particular.
Be quiet, Greg.
thank you. Good evening, Lee Plummel, Community Development Department. I'll be giving a staff report for this item tonight. This is the property. Also, you've read into the record what the application's for, the windows, a new door entry on the building, and a patio area. This is the building also known as the Allison McKenzie office in a Telegraph Street between Minnesota and Division Streets. You have the complete packet with what's been submitted from the applicant showing a little bit more of the building, but just I have a couple of photos to go through here showing it. This is a particular photo up there is the corner of Telegraph and Division Streets just kind of shows the general nature of the frontage of the building. It's a 15,655 square foot two-story office building constructed in 1972. As such, it's not a contributing building to the historic district. But still looking at the guidelines for the windows, doors, and landscaping, again, provided in your staff report, but I'll just briefly highlight a couple things. Regarding the windows, the overall, what the guidelines say is the overall style of the new buildings will determine the appropriate design characteristics of the windows to be used. As I mentioned, this is a 1972 building. Windows for new buildings emulating mid-20th century design should use windows found in designs of those eras. The applicant's proposing to replace the windows in similar design, if not, in this case, material. With the doors, I would say there's a, let me move on to the next photo. So there's doors and also a patio. So this is the corner on Minnesota and Telegraph Street where the patio will be. It'll be between the sidewalk and the building. This block and the neighborhood is characterized by the landscape strip between the street and the sidewalk with landscaping, as previous showed. That's what's around this entire building. And the patio area is going to be behind the sidewalk, as I said, between the sidewalk and the building. With the proposed new door to be where the windows are in the middle of here. I have that in the right area, right, where I'm showing there. So the new door would be in this area. Just as a side note, for me, it's kind of, this building is a little bit unusual for the district in that it's large and dominates the block, and actually, I think from a planning perspective, adding an entrance kind of brings it, instead of being in the back of the building, that it, a little bit more inviting to the neighborhood from a planning perspective. These kinds of walkable neighborhoods, you want to see more entries on buildings like that. So I think that adding a door there is not a negative thing and kind of a positive thing in the continuity of the neighborhood. And of course, with site elements in here, as it says, careful consideration, placement, and relationship of the public sidewalk. As I said, the sidewalk's not being moved. The patio will be behind the sidewalk, so it won't impair that. This is provided in your packet by the applicant. It's an example of the proposed patio fencing. With the stone color to match the building and the wrought iron to match the wrought iron currently utilized around the building. So staff is recommending approval based on the ability to find consistency with the guidelines and Secretary of Interior standards. And it's subject to conditions. So there's besides the standard conditions, just wanted to point out two of the conditions, particularly this project, that the open fencing may not exceed 4 feet. That's just a zoning code requirement that a wrought iron fence in the front yard can't exceed 4 feet. And that also the number eight, second condition I want to note, is that the stone utilized in the fencing is subject to review and approval by the chair prior to installation. So with those conditions, we're recommending approval. And Mike Pavlakis is here to represent the applicant. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Lee. Are there any commission member questions of Lee? Mr. Pavlakis, how are you, Mike?
Mr. Chairman, nice to appear before you. I'm very pleased to, and it's nice to know so many faces on the commission. I don't know all of you, but I've known some of you for a long time. I want to thank Mr. Plemmel for his presentation. I can tell you that I've worked in this building since July of 1978. I've heard it referred to as a taco factory. I like the term non-conforming or non-contributing. I think that's a very nice way to say something about our building. But I can tell you that one of my reasons for wanting to work in Carson City at this, particularly this law firm, was because it's a very pleasant place to work. And part of why it's so pleasant is that we're in such a really lovely area. We've tried to make improvements this year on our landscaping. Ms. Bowers used to be our plant lady, but she said that she liked what we've done. She hopes that it will winter well. What we have noticed is we have single-pane windows currently, and we decided that it was time from an energy perspective and just from a good ownership perspective to replace the windows. I have some additional photographs that these are actually on the interior section of the building. First two pages show what the new windows will look like. These are actually windows that are about a month and a half old. They face the interior parking lot. We did this as a test to see how it would look. So there's virtually no, I mean, I couldn't tell the difference between the old windows and the new. The difference primarily is that the new ones are double pane. The trim is a little bit thinner on the new ones rather than the old ones that are thicker. The third page is an example of the exterior sliding doors that we would anticipate replacing. This is actually Ms. Wright's sliding door to her office. The interior is white. The exterior is bronze that will fit in with the existing. The fourth page shows what the interior looks like. If you look at, just for a moment, if you wouldn't mind looking at that fourth page, on the and what's up here on the board right now is the area where it's actually our employee lounge where those opaque windows are. And again, I didn't realize until we started looking at this project that that's actually glass. I've always thought it was that cheap plexiglass because that's about how much insulation we get from those windows. That is our employee break area. We do occasionally on Friday afternoons have a barbecue for employees, and we would like to have a place for employees to eat their lunch outside. In the packet, and Mr. Plimmel, I don't know if the proposed wall or Lance, that was provided by our contractor as something that exists in the area. And I can tell you that's not my favorite, and I would very much welcome the condition. I didn't realize who the chairman was, but I'm still going to go out on a limb, would welcome the opportunity to work with him. I think that if you look at actually, the picture of the sliding door, and you can see the railing that exists on most of the building now. Maybe just something simple like that would work. Maybe with some red brick that matches the rest of our building, that would work better. Maybe with some stucco as opposed to that the block that's shown in the picture. Again, we're happy to work with the chairman to come up with something. The last picture of the handout shows the railing that exists at an office kitty corner from ours, and I wouldn't even be opposed to something like that. I think that the pilasters might break it up a little bit more, but I think the railing would look good as well. So unless there's some questions, that's all I can offer. And again, it's a pleasure to see you all. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Are there commission member questions, comments?
Mike, are you looking at replacing every window?
Yes.
And were the windows originally metal?
Yes.
And that was 1972?
Correct.
And then when you had the addition, the Hanifin addition, were new windows added at that time?
Yeah, so I'm going to take a step back. Let me correct. We're looking to replace everything in the old part of the building, which is not the Hanifin addition. The Hanifin addition windows were put in 1993, and those are all double pane, and our intent is to try to match those as well as possible in terms of the exterior bronze, the color, the break. They're operable from the inside, so we want it all to match.
So then are all the window configurations will be replaced the same as they were in when Ed Parson designed the building?
Yes. So if you look at the handout on the very first page, those openings are the openings that were put in by Mr. Parsons. You'll notice that there's some brick at the bottom on the window sills. What the installer did, Nevada Glass, he took out the old windows, put in the new, and put caulking around. I'm sure I'm oversimplifying it, but put caulking around it, and that's the. He says he can do that for all of the windows in the old section of the building. The don't think that that picture that Mr. Plemmel has up right now, that is entirely the old section of the building. The window furthest to the left is a new window, or new 1993. So, you know, albeit it's a photograph from far away, but again, the intent is to try to make it all look original.
Sorry, one other question. Did you have, did you look at steel, or did you always go with, I mean, you wanted vinyl, or did you look at steel windows?
We did not look at steel. We contacted Nevada Glass, asked them what they would recommend. They recommended this Milgard product as one that would be, it's not only good from an energy efficiency perspective, but he pointed out after the test installation that it will cut down on noise, which was kind of a bonus. I didn't know that there were steel windows or metal windows available.
On the back patio wall, how tall were you wanting to make the wall?
So the depiction that Mr. Plemmel had, we're happy with a 4 foot tall limit. I'm happy with something like the last picture in the handout. I think that, you know, if you've got an opinion on, are they called pilasters? What was submitted with the application, those pilasters kind of break it up and, in my mind, make it look a little bit more attractive. But we're happy with the overall 4 foot limit.
My kind of the idea that I'd have, because there's obviously more wrought iron in Carson City than there was 20 years ago, a lot more, especially in the district. But you know, the taco kind of connotation. I mean, it does have a, you know, I'm looking at the 1972 originality of the building, and the wrought iron I'm not a fan of, but when you talked about maybe incorporating some of the red brick that matches the planters, matches the windowsills, matches the, that's already going with the stucco, kind of blends in with the roof, that I personally think it would be really cool if you made a wall that had maybe some of that stucco and the brick that contributes to the building. Not that the building's a contributing factor in the district, but the wall would be a contributing factor to the building. Kind of where you're looking at it, and it kind of blends into a certain extent. And then my only other comment is, I'd like to see a window or something that was like metal clad, or metal, or just that would resemble what you've got on the rest of the perimeter. And you know, I know that I recently bought some Andersons that are metal clad, and obviously they're a lot more expensive than the vinyl. But the metal clad looks really cool, and the wood really does help with the energy. But that's my comment.
As far as the fence railing and things, I had the opposite view. I was thinking more of like you have on the second floor railing, the railing that's there with just the little cap plate on it, that the simple would be fit the building maybe better, since it's already an element on the building that you could draw from and use that rather than the ornate wrought iron that's more Victorian sort of
19th century appearance. So
we're totally open to that. And personally, I kind of tend to agree with Mr. Block, but if the committee and the chairman would rather have it be solid wrought iron, I'm not particularly wedded to a particular item. We do have proposals, though, in terms of the material for the windows. We have proposals for their mill guards, and I believe that they are vinyl on the both the inside and the outside. I have regular brochures if you'd like to look at those.
Is the Hannafin edition vinyl windows?
I honestly don't know. Michelle may know.
And the French door is going on the west side of the room.
Correct.
Correct, the one that we see now. And then the other windows will be that similar colonial design and just repeat that.
That's the intent. But they would be more with the black trim around them, they would be see-through as opposed to that white opaque material.
What's the grill work on that now? Is that just, are those open windows that are just for protection? And are you going to replace the grill work or take that off?
Personally, I would like to take the grill work off. They provide absolutely no, I suppose the function they provide is aesthetic. Those two are the, on this picture, are the only operable windows. My guess is that the intent was that people couldn't jump in or jump out, but someone could probably break through any of the other windows if they wanted to do that.
And the wood columns will remain?
That's the intent, except for where the door goes.
Yeah, I think I agree with Luann in terms of just repeating elements on the building for that railing. And you can do, we could use Jed's idea, use brick column or brick posts to anchor it, and that would help tie in the landscaping. If you wanted to go with more decorative wrought iron, I think something that kind of reflects the Spanish design, although not too ornate, would probably be more fitting for the architectural elements of the building rather than something that really is, the pickets are, the wrought iron pickets are pretty Victorian and don't work that well with that style building. So just something to consider. Any other comment?
I hate to mention this, but could this be, I know we keep saying it's non-contributing, but because of the association with Laxalt, could it be an exception to that?
It's within the National Register Historic District, and I know we have a period of significance there that I think goes up to...
It's like 45, I think.
45. When we did the nomination, there was a real architectural bias, so it fell out that way. But I suppose we could.
I think
it's an interesting idea.
It's not just it really is a great building. Like,
thank you.
And it was designed by an important architect for an important person, and yeah, I just want to make sure we treat it that way.
Yeah, and I think with the design elements that we're proposing, we're kind of staying that way. My guess is the Hannafin edition probably does have vinyl, and at least we'll be consistent with that. And I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to hear this, Mike, is because we have this ongoing debate now about vinyl in the historic district, not just fences, but is it an appropriate material? I mean, it's, you know, wood and metal were the traditional historic materials for windows or for window frames. And it just, I think it's important for the commission consider things like windows, and if we approve it, I think it'd help to be specific about matching elements that are existing and things like that. So, and yeah, I'd be happy to work with you guys if there's questions about tweaking designs and things like that. Any other commission member comments?
Question for you, Mr. Chair. When you're talking about the ornate and the picture over the two small windows in one of the front, is that kind of mimicking what they've got over the? I mean, it's on those two windows in that picture, the little ornate thing that's above here, and then of course the baskets underneath the windows in front. I mean, it's a little bit more ornate, and that's almost the Spanish influence, isn't it?
Yeah.
So even if they did the wrought iron fence with maybe stucco pillars with brick caps or something, is that what you're talking about when you're saying ornate?
No, my question was the ornate ones up where the door's going.
Right.
I'm not sure the elements you're pointing out, I think, are important elements on the building. There's the nicer window wrought iron.
Would that be something balconies to possibly incorporate in the fence wall kind of thing in the back?
Yeah, I mean, you could go with the wrought iron design like that. I'd caution, a lot of times stuccoed pillars get massive, and but I think you just need to be aware of scale, especially in a small area like that. I mean, that's
right, because
the solid wood wall it seems too massive, and it draws, I think, having the openings.
So you could go from you could go real quick from a 16-inch square to a 24-inch square to
It seems to me that anything over a foot square is going to be too massive, and if you wanted to do stucco and brick, that would work too. But I think the key is to bring elements of the building into that fence design.
I'm hearing what Mr. Block is saying, and there is some ornamentation on these metal pieces, and if the thought is, and I can see it, I mean, and I'm not a decorator, but I can see that there is a tie-in with the metal on the first floor with the metal rail up above, and it might kind of complement the metal that is on the railing on this outside. I mean, maybe it does make sense to keep that.
Even when you look at the front porch, how you have three or four steps going up there, and you have stucco in the brick platform, and then you have some wrought iron. So I think that a combination of those things might work, and that could be something that could be approved by the chairman at a later date.
The decorative wrought iron that Jed was talking about is the one on the east elevation?
Yep.
Are they the same? They look tackier in the picture for some reason. It's probably
probably cheap on the backside, yeah.
Picture you just showed from the front, yeah, there's some stucco, some red brick, and some railing. I mean, maybe even a combination of that. Like you say, as long as it doesn't get too massive and it makes the thing jump out at you. But I think it's a great idea. It's always good to try to replace grass and shaded areas. That's always fighting with all that stuff. And I think that would be a nice complement to the building with the doors and the windows and the patio.
Yeah, I don't know what the finished height on that front railing is, but if you repeated that design for the little courtyard there, I think that would fit really well.
And thank you.
And the railing works, everything works, so that'd be a good guide. If that finishes at 4 feet, I think it works really well.
It would balance it, wouldn't it? I mean, you're looking on the Telegraph Street, it would just totally balance the building.
Yeah.
It's also a pretty small space, so you don't want to get too massive of columns and things going on there that would take up basically most of your patio space.
So maybe just the metal as opposed to some of the...
Maybe one or two columns, but not a whole row of them around. And also, I think it's nice that you're not taking out the windows or changing the window arrangement, so we still have the same facades are going to be intact, even though the windows themselves are changed. So that's an important element to maintain.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I think if you could work with that front design, maybe reduce the wall height or where the step is, make that wall, reduce the height so it matches 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It would look really nice there. So.
Thank you.
Any other public comment or any other commission member comments?
Coming with that, I mean, you could almost, it's when you put metal posts or wood posts into the ground, you're always going to have weeds of some sort. You're going to have a mowing issue or something like that. And even if you did kind of like a, I don't know, 6-8 inch high kind of a brick base to it and then just did wrought iron in there without any stucco posts, that could really, from a maintenance, and that would just tie it into the whole building. So just another option, but Luann's correct. I mean, you don't want to take away from the limited space that you have. If you do, did my wall idea, it does make it look bigger and probably takes away from the building rather than complement it. So it's just.
Any other commission member comments?
Just one more question. Did you have any problems when you put in those tester windows with the trim on the interior exterior?
No, the installer, Nevada Glass, thought it was going to take him 2 to 3 days, and it took him 2.5 days. And he said it went as well as it could. The only difference is because these are single or double panes and they're replacing single panes, is they take in a little bit more space on the inside. But from the exterior, you really need to know what you're looking for to see the difference.
Okay, thanks.
Any other commission member questions? Is there any public comment? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
I move that we approve HRC-17-120. A request from Allison McKinsey, LT Limited, owner Telegraph Associates, LLC, to replace existing windows with bronze vinyl windows, to convert windows on the west elevation into a door, and to install a patio on the southwest corner of the building with fencing, as noted by, discussed by staff here, along the border on property zoned residential office located at 402 North Division Street. APN 003-238-05, based on the findings and conditions of approval outlined in the staff report and standards and guidelines for rehabilitation in the Carson City Historic District guidelines, consistent with Historic Resources Commissions and policies and with the recommended conditions of approval.
Thank you.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I second.
Mike, you've read the conditions of approval.
We have.
Okay. All in favor?
Should the back fence be approved by the chair at a later date when they have the final, what they're going to do?
In the condition?
Is it in the conditions?
Yes.
By approved by the chair. Okay.
Motion. We have motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mike. And you can coordinate with Hope or Lee.
Thank you.
Throw anything you need at me.
I'd like to thank you all for the work you do for our community, and staff has been great to work with, and I'm very proud to be part of your community. Thank you very much.
Next item is F3, a presentation by Jim Bertolini of the State Historic Preservation Office, SHPO, regarding the role of SHPO and any changes to the Secretary of the Interior Standards and Guidelines for Treatment of Historic Properties. I'm just going to go right to Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Commissioners, for taking the time for this presentation. As the Chairman mentioned, this is just to provide an update to the Commission and to staff about some updates and changes to the Certified Local Government Program that Carson City has participated in since 1987, as well as part of a new annual review process. Specifically, federal regulations governing the certified local government program require SHPO to review CLGs once every 4 years. Since Nevada's CLG community is small, we decided we'd do this every year, especially because of some of the changes that I'll go into a bit farther into the presentation. Just to provide a little bit of background about what the State Historic Preservation Office does, we manage several programs in four general areas: compliance, grants, survey and planning, and outreach. Generally, the Certified Local Government Program is a training program and support for local planning and local historic preservation. But it bleeds into the other areas quite a bit. A couple of the basics, just as a reminder about the CLG program. The simple requirements are that a local government form a historic preservation commission, like the HRC, and then pass and implement an historic preservation ordinance. And that is, of course, most of your business tonight was related to that. The purpose of the program is really to encourage and support local historic preservation programs. If you know anything about the National Historic Preservation Network, it is most powerful and most strong at the local level. Federal regulations are generally advisory. They're limited to federal projects. Federal government has very little role in local preservation on private property. The state as well generally only gets involved to create the statutes that govern local preservation programs, but doesn't get involved in specific decision making. So it is local governments and local preservation commissions like yours that really govern what happens on the ground as far as planning and zoning in your community. A few of the benefits of becoming a certified local government: you get access to dedicated grant funding that's only available to CLGs. You are a consulting party under the National Historic Preservation Act, so federal undertakings within your jurisdiction should be consulting with the HRC and with your staff support. And then it creates opportunities for technical assistance and training, generally from SHPO, but we also try to use that grant funding to leverage bigger opportunities like the camp session, the Commission Assistance and Mentorship Program workshop that you had here in April. Then that's a program run by the National Alliance for Preservation Commissions. Since grant funding is a big part of the CLG benefit, I did run some numbers as far as what funding Carson City has received since 1987. And it's nearly $500,000 worth of HPF funding, and that's just the cash provided in federal dollars. That's not counting your match as far as volunteer, cash match from your Board of Supervisors. And that covered a lot of different projects, from rehabilitation of the Brewery Arts Center to a survey of East Carson City, post-World War II subdivision survey, as well as the survey and then National Register nomination for the West Side Historic District in 2011. So a lot of wonderful projects supported, and of course that's an ongoing thing. That number's only going to go up. Specific to the Certified Local Government Program, and one of the reasons I'm here tonight is to let you know about some updates and changes. For one, we are putting out a new manual for certified local governments, along with some supporting materials. A lot of those supporting materials are going to be geared more towards prospective local governments that are not CLGs, but might become that, such as a model ordinance for them if they don't already have an ordinance in place. We're going to have a suggested model ordinance for them to follow. As far as existing CLGs, the manual itself might be most helpful. It's designed to not only be a guide for how to meet the minimum requirements for the CLG program, but also some best practice at the local level for how to build a successful preservation program. Point forward with the program, I took this program over in earlier this year. You might recall Elise Jolly was formerly the CLG coordinator since March, or I believe February, pardon me. I've been taking over this program, and one of the things we want to emphasize point forward is training, education, and planning support for local historic preservation programs, both for their staff as well as the commissioners. Since you as commissioners are one of the most important pieces, without this commission, Carson City could not be a CLG, and you make a lot of the important decisions that guide how your community preserves its resources. So what we're trying to do is have more trainings available. I will take suggestions. I know I've been interrogating Hope a little bit over the last 6 months about suggestions for training, but if there are questions or aspects of historic preservation that the commissioners would like as well, I'd happily entertain those and see what we can do as far as whether either SHPO can provide a training or if we can bring someone in to provide that training for you. We are also looking for a stronger SHPO role in that training. So a little bit redundant there, but we are looking to do more trainings either at your regularly scheduled meetings or special workshops. We can even do planning or training retreats, depending on the preference of commissioners. And you're probably going to see some web-based webinars or workshops as well, since we've got geography is a constant issue with statewide programs like this. Specific to Carson City, especially since you have a well-established and well-supported program, doesn't mean a whole lot of changes for you. I think the main change will be you'll likely see myself or the CLG coordinator show up on an annual basis, at least for the near future, just to provide a presentation like this, praise you of changes to the program, changes to SHPO priorities, especially as we go into redrafting our statewide preservation plan that will be due to be active in January of 2019. So you'll probably be seeing a lot of questions from us over the next 18 months. Another change, we did in the past have a practice of the SHPO appointing a member to each local historic preservation commission. That practice has been permanently ended in favor of this approach of being a little bit more hands-on with training. We really no longer want to have a SHPO appointee on local commissions, so that your local decisions are your local decisions, and that all of your appointed members are appointed by your governing body rather than a state agency. A little bit, I think we already went through the CLG requirements, what it takes to become a certified local government. As far as what we look for when we do these annual reviews, we call them quadrennial reviews because they're due every 4 years, but again, we're going to be doing these annually for the next few years at least. One thing we check for is a maintenance of an historic building survey that's accessible to the public. That's just the collection of records on your historic resources, survey records, individual building records, and that's something we just check on to make sure if a member of the public has a question, then they're able to access those records fairly easily. Same goes for access to meetings and minutes, which, yes, is a CLG requirement, but also a requirement of Nevada open meeting law. So that's another aspect that we check on. And then and this is part of why I sit through the full HRC meeting tonight, is just to kind of see that your decisions are based in the Secretary's standards for historic preservation. It's not only a federal requirement of the program if you have design review, but it's also adopted in your own ordinance. I believe you have the Secretary of Interior standards for rehabilitation as part of your ordinance and guiding your decision making. And then lastly, just to provide you some updates as far as where SHPO is taking some of the programs that you may interface with. One of those key programs is the National Register of Historic Places. Certified local governments are provided a 60-day review period on any nomination that comes forward within your jurisdiction. Normally, that's a lot easier to facilitate just because it is the CLG that's writing the nomination, usually using grant funds. But if a member of the public is moving forward a nomination, that'll also come before this body for your review and comment. A couple of the materials that are coming forward from our office, in the foreseeable future, actually, our office is emphasizing the production of thematic frameworks. We don't have a lot of reports or syntheses of Nevada's history in general, let alone for historic preservation purposes. So a couple of the thematic documents that we're producing, we just finished what's called a multiple property documentation form. The easiest way to translate that out of National Register language, this is really a report designed to make it much easier to nominate these types of resources or a particular type of resource to the National Register. It establishes the context, it establishes clear registration requirements, both for historic significance and for historic integrity. So ideally, all it leaves for an applicant for the National Register is just a quick site history and then some connections into this report. It's supposed to make this a lot easier. The one that we're finishing up right now, and in fact just waiting on National Park Service approval, is a multiple property form for agriculture in Douglas County and Carson City along the Carson River watershed. We surveyed some 100 ranching properties and agricultural industrial properties as part of that. And so hopefully this will make it a lot easier for folks both in your jurisdiction and south of you in Douglas County to nominate historic ranches to the National Register. We're currently drafting a multiple property form on historic fire stations. And so obviously that included a survey of historic fire stations as much as we could around the state, Carson City being one of those areas. So we took a look at the Warren fire station as well as Station 51 that was a lot older than I thought it was. And then on deck for 2018, we're looking at a statewide report, similar multiple property form, for resources associated with the New Deal in the 1930s. So the Civilian Conservation Corps, Works Progress Administration. We've recognized some resources so far, but we're starting to get requests for more of those, especially out of our state park system that benefited greatly from the Civilian Conservation Corps. So we're looking to build that for the state as well. If you follow the state legislative cycle, this legislative session, we did get a Main Street program authorized. If you're familiar with the Main Street program, or if you're not familiar with it, it's basically an economic development program for downtowns that focuses on small business development, walkability, and historic preservation. It's not strictly a historic preservation program, but that is an important part of it. And it's a program that was assigned to the Governor's Office of Economic Development. I believe Carson City at least attended the training that was a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure who the representatives were for that. But it is a program formerly run by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and one that's been generally successful nationwide at promoting historic preservation as economic development. Which brings me to one of the other things in the SHPO priority wheelhouse that would be beneficial for Carson City to be aware of. We are trying to focus over the next few years and emphasize that historic preservation is an economic development tool. While there are many other reasons to preserve historic buildings, they bring value to our communities, they also bring dollars and job growth to communities, not just for heritage tourism, but simply for small business support, tax incentives, urban density, things that are generally accepted as good economic development factors for communities. One of the programs that we're trying to put forward as part of that is the federal 20% rehabilitation tax credit for major rehabilitation projects on income-producing properties. Just last year, there were over 1,000 certified projects nationwide that leveraged nearly $6 billion in private investment, and it created well over 100,000 jobs nationwide. And to give you an idea of these projects, they're not big. Over half the projects have less than $1 million in qualified expenses. So these are generally small business projects. Here in Nevada, our most recent certification from last year was the Pink House in Genoa that recently opened late in 2016 as a delicatessen and cafe. That was a roughly $1 million project to build a foundation for that building and then bring it into service. As it is today. And that's an example of a small business being able to use that tax credit to receive 20% of the project costs back to the owner. We are hoping to emphasize that program much more. Nevada's historically not used this program very much, in part because we don't have commercial property listed in the National Register, which is a prerequisite for the program. So that's another priority that we have under this. We'll be surveying and listing our historic commercial property in the National Register so that owners can even take advantage of this program when it comes up. Also by request, you may have received a notice about this. The National Park Service, which keeps the Secretary of Interior standards and guidelines for those standards, did update the guidelines this summer. It's a project that's been in the works for the last year and a half. And this summer, they actually released the printed version of those guidelines. They do try and keep a centralized set. The last time they came out with centralized guidelines for this was 1995. So this was designed to incorporate changes in technology, the fact that 22 years of history became historic over that time, and to address that. The standards themselves remain unchanged. They're established in regulation, 36 CFR Part 68 of the federal regulations. So if you know the four preservation areas, restoration, reconstruction, preservation, and rehabilitation, the actual standards have not changed. It's merely the guidance and best practices that are recommended by the Secretary of Interior for how to meet those standards. There is a booklet that we sent to Hope that is your kind of desk copy. We don't have a lot of these, so that should be available if you're able to borrow that from Hope. And just to cover some of the key additions to the new guidelines, again, as I mentioned, they address buildings, features, building systems, and materials that have become historic since 1995. So you're going to see a lot of the things typical of mid and late 20th century architecture. This is now being treated in these guidelines because it's potentially historic. So things like asbestos shingling, vinyl even, because it was starting to be used in the 50s and 60s. Rolled steel windows, aluminum frame windows that you see commonly in 1950s tract homes. Things like that that are common to that period. You're also going to see expanded historic overviews of material systems and building features, and that's not just specific to the new materials that have become historic since 1995, but that's a benefit to all historic materials that are covered in the guidelines. There are some best practices on updates. As you know, the National Park Service, or as you might know, the National Park Service does run a preservation lab out of Louisiana, and the National Trust has its own research center related to best practices on historic buildings. So the guidance is constantly changing. For that reason, the guidelines, while they are a centralized set of recommended treatments, there are also preservation briefs, bulletins, and tech notes that the National Park Service maintains, all of which are constantly being updated as we learn new things, as we develop new methods. Perhaps one of the more relevant ones released earlier this year is an update to the preservation brief, I believe it's number 43, for seismic retrofit, which here in Nevada, being the third most seismically active state in the union, that one's kind of important for those projects that might need to do a seismic retrofit. And the new brief there just emphasizes some sensitive treatments that meet modern building codes. It relies a lot on modeling to make a best treatment choice for historic buildings. There is a new section under the rehabilitation guidelines that addresses new construction that may be helpful for you having a historic district that has non-contributing buildings within it and has empty lots within it that might see new construction over the next few years. That new section is designed to provide guidance for how to best design new construction, so it's sensitive and reflects the character of the area around it. And there's also a new section on resilience to natural hazards. A lot of that focuses on coastal flooding. As you can expect with climate change, that's becoming an issue with most of our coastal states, California, Oregon, Maryland especially, and Florida, places like that. So there's best practice guidance on how to meet those challenges. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that commissioners or staff may have.
Commissioners? Yeah, I have just a question on that brief you mentioned on seismic retrofit. Where is that if I wanted to look at it? Is that part of this larger document that Hope got and has one copy of? Or?
I guess the guidelines are also available online. The National Park Service runs a pretty extensive website that holds most of this information, including the 250-page guidelines. The brief itself is separate. Again, I believe it's bulletin 43. I'd be happy to send hyperlinks to each of those, web links to those through Hope, if that would be helpful.
Any other questions? Staff? Thank you, Jim. You don't have to come just once a year. You're more than welcome to stop by any time. Do you have any?
One question, sorry. Are the studies, the multiple property documentation forms, are those going to be on your website accessible?
Yes. In fact, we do already have 8 multiple property forms and a few historic contexts that are available on our website. The address for that is just shpo.nv.gov/contexts. That'll take you to the webpage that has all of those, including the 8 multiple property forms. Once they're approved by the National Park Service, they'll be posted on that website.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this somewhat relates to the project that we had reviewed today, and that it was a non-contributing building. And our period of significance for the West Side Historic District goes to 1945. So then any building outside that period of significance, are we looking at them as a...
They can be considered historic separately under their own
potentially eligible
period of significance and everything else. This okay. is the National Register listing that is done under these parameters.
But we only have period of significance for the National Register. The West Side Historic District, the other inventory, the rest of the district doesn't have a period of significance.
That was a question that came up this afternoon, and Hope is going to check on it.
I
can't remember offhand if we have one for the Carson City Historic District.
I mean, I was looking at it.
Assuming we do, and I'm assuming it's probably the same as the National Register District, just knowing when the Carson City Historic District was created, I'm sure we wouldn't have gone past the mid-50s.
Right, but. Right. I've just...
But it's something we need to address.
Definitely.
At another point, too. So,
right.
Individually, buildings can still be considered eligible on their own merit.
Just to add to the conversation we had right before this meeting, the conversation with Jim from SHPO's office was essentially, we have non-contributing buildings. How do we properly address modifications, including demolition, to those buildings? And given the way our local guidelines are written, which takes us through, I want to say it was the 60s in terms of architecture. And so that's something going forward we may want to include in a work program to better be able to define what's contributing and what's not.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Jim. I'm glad you got to sit through the whole meeting.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Next item is G, staff reports. There's a staff sidebar.
No report.
G1, discussion only. Planning Division staff reports to the Historic Resources Division. We said there were non-commissioner reports or comments. Future agenda items. Fencing.
It's in the hopper.
It's in the hopper.
It's a big hopper. If we could at least maybe next meeting get an update. Next one is November.
Correct. There's not an October meeting, so I think we should be pretty good. We actually have done work on it. It's just other things are sort of pushing it off the desk, and we need to finalize it before it comes before you.
One other thing, Hope, could we have at meetings, could we get a summary of administrative approvals just so the commissioners all know what's been going on? And there's some other issues pertinent to that. One might be even if it's just a little plastic corrugated sign that we could put in front of properties that have been approved so that anybody walking by will know that it has gotten our approval. I mean, there was a re-roofing job across from Michelle this month that I didn't approve, but it turns out I was out of town and roughed it. And if we don't know it, it'll stop a lot of phone calls to you.
No, that's a great idea. And we had actually, I had tried to start that, and you were approving too much. Just kidding. But no, we can go back, because a lot of times also this commission, you did it today, will approve things subject to approval of the chair, so that way you can know where the chair is in that review. So I think it was beneficial. I'm sorry I didn't keep up with that, but I'll start it up again.
And the other thing we used to do was signing off on projects. When a project was complete, we'd go take a look at it and sign off on it. That way we can see that it's met the conditions.
We can take a look at that.
Okay. Any other items?
So I have a question on the Laxalt building. Do we normally ask for plans? I mean, we had those two copies. It looks like he had some plans from Ed Parsons and then the Hannafin plans. Do you ask for all the original materials? I'm just wondering because I want to go over and look at those plans.
Okay. What we tend to do in the staff review is we look at the scope of the request. Based on the scope of the request, we review the survey information and any other information we have available in the office to identify what the character-defining features were. Then we look at the guidelines to see what the Secretary of the Interior guidelines, as well as the local guidelines, say about those aspects of the building that are being contemplated for modification. So do we stop and let's just make it easy. If it's swapping out windows with no change of fenestration, that might be something we're looking purely at the windows as opposed to the entire building and what was the material of the building and when were additions and so on and so forth. So to be truthful, we have not been including that level of information. We can certainly do that.
Well, and I can also see in this case, because it is considered non-contributing and it's 1972, so I mean, just kind of my own personal interest in looking at Ed Parsons' plans and the fact that this is a great building.
We can, to the extent the information is available, we can try to make it available to you. We do give you all the survey data, but I think with a lot of the single family residential in particular, the plans won't be available.
Anything else? Hope, thank you for the energy advice. I hope we make it more than available to homeowners in the district as well as in Carson City, because there's some good information in there about real ways to save energy rather than taking out your single pane windows and throwing in.
Yeah. Well, and just a sidebar comment up from the camp program, and they talked about windows and restoring them and weather stripping. I did take her advice and stopped at Menards in Nebraska, I think it was, and did get some of the spring metal to try to insulate some of my single pane windows, which with vinyl shutters work awesome.
Public comments. Members of the public who wish to address the commission may approach the podium at this time to speak on matters relevant to or within the authority of the Historic Resources Commission, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. No item may be taken on a matter raised under this public comment portion of the agenda. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, I'll introduce a motion for possible adjournment.
So moved.
Second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.